Focus on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas, and it happened just the other day. I'd spent some time in front of my laptop screen. I do that quite a lot. And I just walked to the kitchen to get a cup of tea. Actually, I do that a lot too. Suddenly, I realised that everything had turned rather fuzzy and blurred, and for a moment, I wondered if I was having a funny turn, an unusual British phrase for getting ill, because everything seemed horribly out of focus. But then I realised the problem. I was navigating my way around the house while wearing my reading glasses, helpful for computer work, rubbish for anything else. In short, I wasn't seeing straight. And that really got me thinking, which is usually dangerous. I wondered, how well do I see things? What's my perspective like when it comes to life? Do I see myself correctly, or am I blind to some faults and irritating habits that others see with 20/20 clarity, but I'm quite unaware of them? And then, do I really see others, or do I dash by them, barely noticing them? And what's the value of just noticing people, especially noticing and valuing the elderly? Tonight, on Lucas on Life, let's talk about perspective, the way that we see or don't see in our lives. We're talking about perspective, the way that we see things. Eyeing up a splendidly colourful shirt in the shop window, I decided to investigate further. A doorbell ding announced my arrival, and I was greeted by a chap who'd begun his day by pouring himself into skinny jeans that were surely restricting his circulation. Greeting me with a smile, he looked me up and down. "Good morning, sir," he said. "Looking for something a little bit more trendy, are we?" Resisting the temptation to flee, I affirmed my interest in that psychedelic shirt. Emboldened because the item was actually on sale and brushing aside any concern that I might look like Joseph with his famous coat of many colours, I emerged from the store wearing my new purchase. Throughout the rest of that day, people complimented me on my fashion choice, although one or two smirked as they did so. Was the shirt just a bit too much, I wondered. Arriving home, my wife Kay put on sunglasses in response to my dazzling attire and then burst out laughing as I did a twirl to model my new look. Apparently, the lean sales assistant had forgotten to remove a very large label from the back of the shirt, and so I'd spent the day sporting a tag that read, "Massively reduced, won't last long." Others had seen something about me that was screamingly obvious, but I hadn't noticed it myself. It happens all the time, often at a much more serious level. There's that chatty friend who dominates every conversation by talking about himself, outlining in agonizing detail stories about where he's been, who he's met, and what his future plans are. When he finally pauses for breath and someone seizes the opportunity to share something, his response is predictable. "Oh, that happened to me too. Let me tell you about it." His friends groan in resignation and quietly wonder about resigning from being his friend. Sometimes this lack of self-awareness morphs into something more sinister as we harshly criticize others for doing what we do all the time. I watched in horror as a senior church leader berated his staff for always being late for meetings, apparently unaware of what they were all thinking. Being unpunctual was his own continuous habit, and ironically, he'd been 20 minutes late for the gathering when he rebuked everybody for being late. In a teaching style reminiscent of Monty Python, Jesus painted a portrait of a hapless chap who runs around with a magnifying glass, mustard keen to identify specks of sawdust in the eyes of others, but all along oblivious to the whacking great plank that sticks out from his own head. Apparently, this log in Jesus' day would have been the main support for a house, which would have made it about 12 metres long, a significant protrusion. If we're to avoid this self-myopia, we all need friends who can tell us what we don't want to hear about ourselves. They can give us perspective, even unwelcome perspective. And more positively, they can also help us to discover what's right with us as well as what might be wrong. we can be oblivious to the positive aspects of who we are, naming ourselves after our worst moments of regret. Shame blinds us to the good work that God has done in shaping our character. When we're looking to identify our spiritual gifts, those closest to us can help us discover our God-given strengths as well as our human fragilities. Again, friends bring perspective. There was another smile to come on the day when I bought that super loud shirt. Kay, who had jokingly donned those sunglasses when she saw it, spent 20 frustrated minutes searching for them. It turns out that they were parked on top of her head all the time. She just hadn't noticed. The way I see it. My name is Jeff, and his name is also Jeff. He's a farmer, and he's part of our church family here in Colorado. He is hilarious. Most Sunday mornings, we share a laugh or two after the service is over. But I was quite unprepared for his warm, sincere offer of hospitality recently. "We're pregnancy checking the cows this week, Jeff," he smiled. "Why don't you come over and lend us a hand?" For the uninitiated in these matters, let me say that I quickly learned that he needed my arm, not just my hand. Without being too indelicate, farmers can either use blood tests or simply insert their arms into the hapless cow's rear end and find out manually if Daisy is in the family way. In all of my years of ministry, I've never received such an invitation, which I politely declined. Knowing the way my life usually turns out, Daisy would be irritated by such an invasive greeting from me and would dash around the field with me attached to her and screaming for help. No, thank you very much. Just last weekend, Jeff offered another easy-to-resist invitation to the farm. "We're castrating the bulls now," he said, as I quietly controlled the urge to weep. "Want to help us out?" I mumbled that I had a busy week. But then, in an instant, everything took a totally different tone. Jeff's laugh-out-loud face looked very serious indeed. "Actually, we farmers could really do with some prayer support right now," he whispered, his eyes sad. "We're in a major drought here. A third of my wheat crop has died already. We desperately need some rain." So I promised to pray, and I did. And after he'd gone, I considered my own attitude, my perspective about rain. I love the rolling green hills that we enjoy in the UK, but I've never been thrilled about the clouds that freely irrigate them. I like it when my windscreen wipers are on sabbatical. So much do I love sunshine, sometimes I've wrestled with what I hope might be a calling to serve in beach missions in Hawaii. My brief conversation with my father friend gave me a whole new perspective about rain. It was the French novelist Anne Nin who wrote tellingly, "We do not see things as they are, but as we are." Depression can distort our view on things, as can fear. And sadly, prejudice of all kinds blurs our focus too. When we form an opinion of a person or a people group, our eyes are wide open to that which confirms our opinion, but we're often blind to what contradicts it. "You always" can be a lethal turn of phrase in a marriage. Once we've made up our minds about someone, we can quickly close our hearts to them as well. So when we disagree, let's go out of our way to listen hard before speaking much. Let's carefully consider a different point of view and be open to the unpalatable but very real possibility that we may be wrong. Later that Sunday, a quarter of an inch fell, a welcome response to the prayers of many. And we had quite a good soaking just this morning. Looking out at the puddles through my windows beaded with water, I welcomed it as a blessing. My view, my perspective of rain changed forever. And my perspective on jocular Jeff has changed as well. Now, he's not just the vivacious, cheerful chappy who always brings a smile, but a man whose challenges and burdens I can understand just a little more. So let's pray that God will give us eyes to see with his perspective on life, on others, on ourselves. And while we're at it, please spare a thought for Daisy, the pregnant cow, and Johnny, the frisky ball, because they're both looking just a little nervous. It's a Christmas favourite with us. Macaulay Culkin is in his 40s now, but for many, he will forever be Kevin McAllister, the precocious 10-year-old in the blockbuster 1990 comedy Home Alone. For those unfamiliar with the film, Kevin's parents take off for a Christmas in Paris, unaware that they've left their young son behind. At first, we feel deep concern for the youngster, left to his own devices with his family an ocean away. But then, as two wannabe and hapless burglars target the McAllister home, they encounter a series of ingenious traps, and young Kevin, he wins the day. Over the last few months, I've experienced what it means to be home alone in Colorado. My wife Kay has been in England caring for a family member, and so we've been navigating the longest time apart in our 45 years of marriage. I've lost some weight as a result of our temporary separation because I've developed a new diet plan called cooking for myself. That's not to pander to a sexist stereotype that women are responsible for the culinary arts. It's just that in our partnership, Kay is a better cook. I did have one success during that time of loneliness, rustling up a rather splendid chicken fried rice. It was so good, I was prayerfully considering a career move and becoming a TV celebrity chef. But there would only be one episode. I was soon humbled. The next day, the meal I cooked was utterly disgusting. The recipe might be useful as a weapon. I've been helped by our mutual decision to move another woman into our house. In Kay's absence, this pleasant and attractive lady suggests meal choices, wakes me up in the morning, and reminds me of my most important tasks of the day. The only drawback is that she occasionally speaks without being spoken to. Her name is Alexa. For those who are not tech savvy and who are now thinking that I'm a loose living misogynist, Mrs. A, Alexa, is a cloud-based artificial intelligence device. She helps and occasionally hurts because she's just informed me that Kay is precisely 4,667 miles away. But even though Alexa and I have occasional chats, it's still been lonely. Arriving home to an empty house at the end of a long day has felt emotionally lean. Nobody to reflect or chatter with. No opinion to be sought. No comfort to share. No shoulder to lean on. Now, let me be very, very clear. Obviously, my experience of loneliness is but a fraction, perhaps 1/1,000,000th of 1%, of the reality of those who daily experience the hollowness of aloneness. My solitary confinement is temporary, but for them, there is no respite in sight. So many ache for a partner to love, a baby to hold, a friend who understands. Perhaps you're one of them. But all that said, I have renewed empathy for those who do much of life with just them and their shadow, and especially for those who are widowed. Scripture places special emphasis on the need to look out for widows, and not just because in biblical times they lived perilously at the bottom of the economic ladder. The widowed have lost the love of their lives. They might have been told that he had a good innings, it's for the best, Jesus must have needed him, or it must have been his time. Well-meaning Christians often resort to cliches in clumsy attempts to comfort and become rather like Job's bumbling friends in their efforts. So let's look out for the lonely. Whatever the context or cause for their loneliness, let's ask God to give us fresh perspective in this area, because the psalmist reminds us that God places the lonely in families. Psalm 68. To be part of God's family, the church, is not only a privilege, but it brings to all of us the responsibility of care and concern, and that only happens when we invite God's perspective to be our own. As someone who's getting older, I'm noticing that age is blurring me. Some people, especially younger people, don't see me. They view me as an accessory to my kids or grandkids, just the old guy. And this is concerning. Older people in our church have remarked that sometimes they don't feel seen and heard, that their age seems to make them less significant in the eyes of others, which is precisely opposite of the biblical view on aging, where having some years on the clock calls for a level of respect. Speaking of concern, I'm rather worried about Macaulay Culkin's aka Kevin's family, because the sequel to that first movie, Home Alone 2, had young Kevin being separated from them once again, this time in the bewildering sprawl of New York City. Yikes, that family needs to do better. Someone calls social services. And perhaps we all need to do better when it comes to perspective. Thanks for joining me. See you next week. Lucas on Life.